Well, thank you all. I've been excited to share with you this evening. I come to you definitely not as an expert. You can just ask my kids. Sometimes I'm sure I was too strict. I started asking a few questions, and then it got a little discouraging, so I decided to quit asking many more questions about my own discipline. But I'm sure that there were times I was too strict, times that I was too lenient, and isn't it good that God's grace is bigger? So you have great resources right in this room. My goal tonight is just to give you some principles. Actually, Natalie in her book review gave you a great overview. I'm going to probably just expand on a few of the points that she made. Some of what I tell you, probably a lot of what I tell you, will not be new. And you can just think of it as maybe kind of a checklist of some things that you want to kind of focus on. Some of you have sweet little infants, and you know that this is coming, so you can just enjoy the stage where you are right now. When Natalie was doing the book review, I did a quick flashback to a picture that I have of one of our sons. Okay, Dare to Discipline is one, I think is one of the books in that collection, right? Yeah, Dare to Discipline. So that was coming out about the time that we started our family, and I have a picture of one of our sons sitting on the toilet reading Dare to Discipline upside down. And I'm pretty sure he was just trying to stay a step ahead of me. So what is our motivation for discipline? I'm going to be really honest with you. I think a lot of times it's just sanity. You know, we're just trying to get through the day with dinner and laundry and changing diapers, and then we've got the toddler who is deciding to act up at that moment. Sometimes our discipline is for reasons of safety, like crossing the street or staying near us in the mall. And honestly, isn't it sometimes to avoid embarrassment? You know, kids can choose to act up at the most inopportune moments. And sometimes it's just for our comfort, right? We just want things to be peaceful and to go smoothly for just a few minutes. But I want to assure you that even though we want kids to take responsibility for their behavior, that's the longer goal, isn't it? And to have self-control, we want them to interact well with others, to respond to authority as they spread their wings and maybe even go off to school. But kids don't disobey because you're a bad parent. Did you hear me on that? Kids don't disobey because you're a bad parent. Kids disobey because they are sinners just like we are. Kids disobey because they need a new heart just like we need a new heart. As God told his Israelite children, I will give you a new heart and a new spirit I will put within you. I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes and to be careful to obey my rules. We all need new hearts. Isn't it wonderful that Jesus Christ came to take away the sin in our heart and to give us a new heart as he puts his spirit within us? We need that, and you know what? Our kids need that. But we're waiting for that day when they will make that decision personally to trust Christ for their salvation. And in the meantime, we have this responsibility for training. So even though they may not feel gratitude, what are you doing? You're still teaching them to say thank you, right? I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful if every time they said thank you, wouldn't it be wonderful if every time we said thank you, we felt gratitude? So we want it to go eventually from the external to the internal. But in the meantime, we are training them with appropriate responses that help them in their relationship with God and with each other. So an important motivation for discipline comes really from the Ten Commandments. In the teammates class, we've been going through Exodus, and as we were looking at the Ten Commandments, I was thinking about this, the sanctity of authority. Honor your father and mother, right? And then in Ephesians, Paul says, very specifically, children, obey your parents, and to parents, bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So as we are teaching our kids to obey, we're really positioning them to learn to obey their Heavenly Father, aren't we? And we're putting them in a position for their hearts to be tender and ready to learn. So we discipline our children with that goal of training them, that just as they've learned to obey us, someday, you know, we're holding their hands now, And someday we're going to transfer that to them holding God's hand and walking with him. And so we want them to be prepared to respond to him. And you know, God's instruction is always in our best interest, isn't it? So we're just trying to enable that kind of relationship between our kids and their Heavenly Father. And I called this love through discipline because I was thinking about Proverbs 13:24. And it says, whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline. So that diligence in discipline, it indicates our love for our kids, doesn't it? It's a great way that we love our kids, but it's hard work. And sometimes it feels like you're making progress. Sometimes it feels like we're spinning our wheels. But the most important thing you need to know about this topic of discipline is that God's going to use it to keep you dependent on him. And that's a great place to be. So I want to just talk to you mom to mom tonight. My desire is that this would be intensely practical for you. Because isn't this where most of you are living every day? Right? I mean, that constant interaction of training our kids. And so I hope that this will be practical for you. And you should have on your table, you guys probably already passed that, a place to take some notes. But the first point that I want to talk with you about is just to communicate expectations. This is something that Natalie was mentioning from her overview of the strong-willed child, too. I think the best thing we can do is to work hard before the misbehavior occurs. Probably if we spend more time on this aspect, it might help us to avoid a little bit of the consequences if we take more time to explain expectations. And that takes thinking on our part, doesn't it? We have to be anticipating the situations, preparing our child before the situation. They're going to a friend's house, and you get to the house, and you kind of define the boundaries. We're not playing upstairs. This is the room where we're going to play. Or you're going to... Do you still have to be quiet in the library?
Yes.
Okay. I haven't been to the library in a long time. So before you go to the library, it's, you know, we're going to use our soft voice, and you practice in the car. You know, you're preparing them for that. Or the baby's getting ready to nap, and you're telling your toddler, are we going to talk while the baby's asleep? Shh. Talk softly. You know, you're preparing them. You're anticipating the situations. So I'm going to give you four verbs that go with this. The first one is to anticipate situations. The second one is to teach. And I think the more time we spend here, the less time we'll have to spend in consequences. So they need things broken down very clearly. When we say clean up, we know what we mean, right? We know it means pick up the toys, put them on the shelf, put them in the right bin. We know what that means, but cleanup is pretty generic, so we have to break it down a step at a time and show them what we mean. We need to do it together, right? And the younger your child is, the more concrete it needs to be to show them. Words are very abstract. So whatever words we're using, we want to try and define it for them. And then the next verb I want to give you is model. Show them how. You know how you take their hand and help them see, this is how you touch the baby softly. You know? You set it up for them to share. Here's how you share. I'm sure you all are doing that, right? You hand them the toy, you walk with them, help them hand it to the other person, and show them how to share. So modeling, and then practice. Practice positive behavior. One thing I remember when our daughter, who's now 24, was little, I noticed that I would call her and she didn't necessarily come. So we practiced. So I would put her in one room of the house. I'd go somewhere else and say, Meredith, come. And we'd practice having her come. Yay, you know, make a big deal about it. Take her to another room. And I'd go somewhere else. It's kind of like dog training, you know. But it works, right? You practice. So rather than doing it when we're in the mall and she's running away from you, we've already practiced that behavior. So... the next thing I want to talk about is clarifying consequences. Now, I know one of the questions that is really common is, at what age do we start to discipline? And, you know, that's kind of a sliding scale, because it's not like you wake up one day and go, all of a sudden, okay, this is, they turned this number, this many, this exact age, and this is where you're starting. And development is so unique to each child, and, you know, we want to keep in mind their personality. And I'm glad Natalie mentioned too, you know, their stage of development. But I'll tell you what I think is helpful is to just hold them accountable to what they understand. So when you say to your child, no, you may not play with the picture frame on the end table, and they're old enough to understand it, and they look at you and pick it up, right? You pretty well know that they got it. We have three sons and then a daughter. So our daughter was way more verbal than our sons were. And so all of a sudden, when she started talking so much earlier, I went, oh my goodness, those boys understood so much more than what I realized. They just couldn't say it. You know, our receptive vocabulary is much stronger than our expressive, right? So even though our kids may not be able to express things, they're understanding much more than they can express. So we have to kind of watch their behavior and judge. When are they ready for me to hold them accountable? And once they understand, they need to be held accountable. So let's talk about just some general life principles with consequences. There are always consequences for our behavior, right? That is just a fact of life. It's the way life works. We have choices. There are consequences for those choices. And ultimately, God holds each of us accountable for our choices. And we want to give our kids an opportunity to understand that. Now, what's wonderful is grace. And grace means we get so much better than we deserve. But I can tell you that your two-year-old, your three-year-old, is probably not going to understand that concept real well quite yet. And they will as they get older. And you're going to be teaching them about that. But when it comes to their behavior, you are trying to help them get that concept that the choices they make determine consequences. And it makes me think back to God's covenant with the Israelites. They were on Mount Nebo and Mount Ebal, and they were rehearsing, if you obey, there are all these blessings. And if you disobey, there are all these curses, right? And God was training his people to understand, in order to have a right relationship with him, when they obeyed, good things happened. When they disobeyed, bad things were going to happen. So in general, we know that's the way life works, doesn't it? Now, there are times that we suffer for righteousness. And we know that. But as our kids are growing up, we want them to get that general concept that they have choices and there are consequences. And the consequences, it's hard, but if you think of it this way, it's short-term pain for long-term gain. Okay? So it's hard work, and those consequences sometimes are painful, but in the long run, great game. So consequences take many forms. I bet a lot of you have questions about that, and I hope you have some good discussion about that at your table too. But I want to just give you some principles that I hope will be helpful. So the consequence that you always have in your back pocket is praise. And praise can be so powerful. They ate all their dinner. Yay! They shared their toys, right? You make a big deal about it. They touched the baby softly. They stayed in bed. Whatever it is that they're doing well, you've heard that phrase of catch your kids being good, right? Because what kind of behavior gets most of our attention? The negative, right? And so if we back it up and we're watching for opportunities to praise what they're doing right, we're reinforcing that so that they're getting lots of attention from us for doing the right things. I think one of the important things when you're praising kids is to help them reflect on how they feel. Remember, we want to eventually move this from external to internal. And one of the ways we do that is to say, it makes me so happy. And doesn't it make you feel happy when you have obeyed? Whatever it is they're doing, you're real specific. And you bring it back to, look at how I'm smiling. Look how you're smiling. Look how Daddy's smiling. You know, it makes God happy when we obey. And we're trying to reflect that those emotions go along with positive behavior. So sometimes praise is enough. And you can maintain a behavior just with that kind of feedback. Right now, I'm tutoring a student, and her father had said to me, you know, do you think you could, what if you gave her, like, maybe let her work for a candy bar for working really hard? And I thought, you know, right now she has the incentive. Why would I back up and offer her incentive for something that she's already got an intrinsic motivation for, right? So you want to watch that you're not rewarding things that don't need to be rewarded, because sometimes just doing a good job and praising them is enough. But let's talk about those behaviors that you have to really work at and change. And how do we do that? So there are a couple of categories that you're already familiar with, rewards and punishment. Rewards is simply presenting something positive. It could also take the form of taking away something negative. That would probably be when they're a little bit older, like, we'll give you a break. You don't have to do your chores today because you worked so hard at something else. That would be taking away something negative. At your stage of parenting, most of the time, the reward is going to be presenting something positive. The punishment, on the other hand, is presenting something negative, or it's taking away something positive, right? So either one of those could be in the form of punishment. So one thing I would encourage you to do is to make a list of the things that your kids like or don't like doing. Things that they like playing with, things that they don't want to give up. And then you've got sort of a list to draw from when you're working on a specific behavior. What motivates them? What are they willing to work for? And that's going to be so unique to your child. It's going to be unique to their personality. It's going to change just about the time you think something's working. It's not going to work anymore, right? So you'll have to keep changing with them. Now, things like time out can work really well if your child is social. If your child loves being in the room by themselves and looking at books and playing with toys alone, you know, is time out going to work? Probably not. If your child's social and they have to sit off by themselves, then you just have lots of fun that they can hear. It's within earshot, you know. You're having a party going on. You're having so much fun. And they hate missing out on the fun, right? But you have to figure out what works for your child, what kind of consequences are going to work for them. So let me just talk a little bit about natural consequences. There is a book that I love. It's called Parenting with Love and Logic, and it's by Klein and Fay. And it is not a specifically a Christian book, although the authors, I think, are Christians. But it talks a lot about, the first half of the book is a lot about theory of pairing choices and consequences. And the second half of the book is a lot of specific examples. It's like you get to watch somebody else parent and see how you can match consequences to choices. I think this is one of the areas that I started to grow in a little bit more later in my parenting. Was figuring out how to make it logical, how to connect the consequence with what they actually did so that they began to think more logically. Because we want to be asking questions. I mean, we already know all the answers, right? And so we want them thinking about their behavior and what the consequences are and making that connection. So, for example, a positive natural consequence might be you stayed in bed for your nap. So now we have time to play. Or you cleaned up your toys so quickly. Let's sit and read a book. You did it so fast and you did it so well. Look, we have extra time now. We can sit and read a book. So those are just sort of natural positive consequences that happen in the course of the day. And what about negative consequences? Well, you always want to keep safety in mind. I remember one of our kids always stood up in the high chair. And I, the funny thing is, you know, if I told him what was going to happen if he didn't sit down, he would just stand there and cry about what was going to happen if he didn't sit down. Instead of like, just sit down and then it doesn't have to happen. And I thought, well, if he ever fell, he might get it. But, you know, that's too dangerous, right? He could get reported for all kinds of things. But you want things to be as natural as possible. So I'll give you another example. Our kids were watching... They used to watch these really old, like black and white TV shows, and Zorro was one of them. And so their grandpa made them, this was our oldest two boys, made them these swords out of cardboard, these Zorro swords. Well, Zorro went around writing Z's on everything. So I went in after nap time, and on the wall, with the cardboard sword, there are these Z's all over the wall. Well, I mean, I'm not sure that it was intentional, like they knew that they were going to write on the wall, but at the same time, it had happened, right? So what's the logical thing to do? Exactly, you have to clean it up, right? So, wow, we worked really hard at cleaning it up and talking about, well, you know, next time if you notice it's making a mark, or it's probably a good idea to stop, because, boy, it's so much work getting this off the wall. So that's just a logical consequence. What about stealing? My son reminded me today that when he was little, had been at some friend's house. They lived out of the area. And when we got home, he had this balloon, and we blew it up, and then Steve and I looked at each other and went, wait, where did he get the balloon? So, you know, where did you get the balloon? Oh, it was on the floor of so-and-so's house. Oh, you took the balloon from their house. Yeah, I just took the balloon. He wasn't really going to tell us. First of all, he had all kinds of excuses, and then finally he came clean and he took the balloon. So had they lived closer, what would we have done? Take it back, right? And you have to go, it's really hard. You know, you walk with them, ring the doorbell, I'm really sorry, I took your balloon. Of course, the person through the door has gone, oh, yeah, right, I really care about the balloon. But we got to support each other in these things, right? So what he told me is that he had to call and apologize to them for taking the balloon. I remember the time there were chin-ups on the towel bar in the bathroom. So you know what happened at the towel bar. Okay, and this is not, you know how we talked about, you know, communicating expectations? You just can't cover everything. It never occurred to me to say, please do not do chin-ups on the towel bar in the bathroom when you have a babysitter and we're gone. You know, I just hadn't covered all those bases. But when that happens, again, natural consequence. Well, you gotta go with Dad and get all the supplies, and then you make a big deal about, oh, I'm so sorry, you're missing out on blah 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 because you gotta go to the store and get the supplies, and then you come back. Oh boy, you don't have time to play because now you gotta work, and I mean, it's just a natural consequence, right? You're just trying to pair it, right? So it's parenting with love and logic. So let's talk about the delivery of the consequences. This is a principle that I found really helpful as I was studying behavioral principles. And then when I became a parent, this came back to me as some of what I had learned in college, and it was really helpful to me. And I think you have this in your notes where I have concrete, abstract. Do you see that on there? Immediate, delayed, predictable, variable. So the younger they are, you got to stay on the left-hand side of that list. Kids need really concrete consequences. They need it immediate, and it has to be predictable. Now, as they get older, you can move away from that. Or as a behavior becomes a habit, it doesn't have to be a one-on-one relationship. It doesn't have to be every time they've done the targeted behavior that they get something for it, or there's a consequence, either positive or negative. You can stretch that out as they get older, right? But when they're young, you can't wait, right? It's got to happen right away. For instance, abstract might be just your praise. Or, you know, I can remember hearing parents say in dealing with their children with maybe lies, you don't want to grow up to be a criminal. Well, the kid's three. You know, they're really not projecting like what's going to happen down the line at some point, right? So it's got to be very concrete. And we all know about delayed gratification, right? As they get older, they can delay it. But the younger they are, the more immediate it has to be. And it has to be predictable. If you think about, I mean, I hate to compare our kids to dogs, but how many of you have dogs and you've trained dogs, right? Not that many of you. Oh, it's because you have little kids. That's awesome. I didn't have a dog when I had little kids either. My kids used to say, why can't we have a dog? Aunt Mimi has a dog. And I said, yeah, because she has three kids. We have three kids and a baby. We don't have three kids and a dog and a baby. So eventually we did get the dog, and I thought I should have had a dog first because I would have learned a lot about training if I'd had the dog first. You know, when you're teaching a dog some trick, you know, like to shake, you have to reward the dog every single time, right? And then they get the behavior. It becomes automatic. And then after that, you know, you can do the shake thing, and you don't have to reward them every single time, okay? So like I said, I hate to compared to dogs, but that's sort of what the principle is. So I was looking back. I had saved a few things from, I'm really not a hoarder, it's going to look that way, but I had saved a few things from when Meredith was little because I was doing a talk on discipline, and I pulled these out because I think this will illustrate it. Okay, so this is I obeyed quickly. You can tell what we were working on. Obeying quickly. And so we had this on the refrigerator, and we would do the practice thing, and every time she obeyed, quick, put a sticker on, yay, 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 really excited. Okay. It must have been a big deal because then this was, I obeyed cheerfully. And we worked on that for a while. Okay, then this is a little later. You can tell I'm big on charts. I think it's the teacher thing in me. But eating must have been an issue at this point. So this was, I ate well, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The Arthur stickers, that was, you know, reflective of the era. So it would be at the end of that meal, we'd say, you know, look at how much you ate. Yeah, you ate well. And then as they get older, you're expanding it. So this has, like, days of the week, and this, again, must have been mealtime. Isn't mealtime, like, there's just a lot of behavior that goes on at mealtime, right? There's just so many things kids can do at a table with food. But this was, and they're pictures, okay? So I stayed in my chair. I used a soft voice. I finished my food. I cleared my place, okay? And there are pictures to go with them. And so after the meal, we would go through, you know, how do we do it? I noticed some of these. I think she was trying to cheat and have a few little smiley faces in where they weren't happening. So do you see how, you know, you're expanding, right, as they get older? Now, sometimes stickers on a chart are, you know, that may be all that it takes. As they get older, it may be a delayed gratification thing where they're earning some special privilege or some little treat. It may have been something you were going to do anyway, but you just help them to work for it, right? So, in choosing consequences, choose consequences that you can follow through on. Sometimes we punish ourselves with the consequences we come up with. And sometimes, you know, we're just doing the best we can in the moment, and afterwards we think, what was I thinking? Like, I just remember when I was little, my mom said, you can't eat your soup. You can't get down until you eat your soup. So then it becomes a standoff, right? I mean, really, can you stay there till they're 16 waiting for them to eat the soup? You know, what would be a better consequence? You don't get anything to eat until dinner time. No snacks, nothing. You know, if this is lunch, don't get anything until dinner time. If you don't eat, that's fine. You get down, but it's a natural consequence. You know, you didn't eat. Well, you can't snack, and they could begin to figure it out. I was in the airport one time, and I felt so sorry for this mom because I could so relate. You know, she's got her kid with her. It's just a mom and a little kid, and he's not cooperating, and she's exasperated, and she says, if you don't stand up and walk with me right now, you're not going on that airplane. I think, yeah, right, you're going to forego that ticket you just paid for. But we've all been there, right? You're just grabbing for something. So choose consequences that you can actually follow through on. So I want to talk about when you have one specific behavior that you're trying to help your child change. And, you know, we can't focus on everything. Sometimes you're going to have to choose. There's something that's grabbing your attention, probably whatever's getting you upset. There might be a reason for that. Maybe it's a behavior that's being repeated frequently or that just really needs to be addressed. And so let's say that you have that one specific behavior that you're going to focus on, and you're going to define and explain the behavior to your child. We're assuming that your child is at a point where they can understand, and you're going to model it for them. But you're going to do that outside of the situation because you're now, you know, like, we're focusing on this. We're going to get this under control because this is really important. So you don't wait until they're misbehaving. You do it outside the situation. You explain it to them. Explain the consequence. It's usually in an if-then kind of statement. And you're going to role play if possible. Let's take whining, for example. You know, you're going to show them, what does it sound like when we whine? Let's whine together, you know. Okay, now let's, and then you have to think of a word. What would be a word for the opposite? What kind of voice do you want them to use? Cheerful. A cheerful voice, good. Yeah. A calm voice, a kind voice, whatever word you think they're going to connect with. And you practice talking that way so they know exactly what you're talking about. And then you're going to be watching that you praise the opposite behavior. So if you're working on whining, then you're talking to them about, oh, you asked that so, what was the word you all chose? Cheerfully. You asked that so cheerfully. You know, you're gonna watch for when they're doing the opposite behavior and really praising that. But you've talked with them ahead of time about what the consequences are. So the next part is just to carry through with consistency. And oh, doesn't that word bring a lot of guilt? Isn't it so hard? Why is it they choose, like, the moment that you're late and you're trying to get out the door, or the moment that you're with the mom who seems like her kids are always perfect, and you got to follow through on what your kid just did, that you know you have to address? But being consistent is so inconvenient, but it's so important, and we all know that. So sometimes we have to check, you know, why is it hard to be consistent? I will tell you, at your stage of parenting, it just takes a lot of time and energy and effort, and you have to reserve some space in your life and some energy and some attention to be able to do that. I didn't always do that well, but I would encourage you to, if you're getting frustrated, check to see if you're overcommitted or distracted. And maybe especially when you're going through a hard time with one of your kids where it's requiring more, you might have to let go of a few other things to get the attention that it needs. But we want to make sure our kids know that whatever we mean, whatever we say, we actually mean. If we say no, we mean no. If we've said this is going to happen, if they do that, if then, that we're ready to follow through. Now, I'm going to give you an example of why it's so important, because this is something that we've probably all experienced. The crying baby in the bed, right? And you've decided they are dry, they've been fed, there's no fever, they're not teething, they're okay. And they just want you to come and get them. Either they want to play or they want to be held. And there is a stage where it's time for them to be able to calm themselves and go to sleep. And so they cry for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. And you got the earplugs in, they're just trying to get to sleep, and they're still crying, they're crying, they're crying. You get to 90 minutes, and you finally give up, and you go in. What did you just do? What did you just teach them? If you cry for 90 minutes, she will come. So what you've just done inadvertently is reinforce the behavior you're trying to get rid of, right? You're trying to get them to stop crying, thinking that if and that's maybe not the best example because I'm not trying to be cruel, you know. And there are times that we have to go in and check on them and make sure everything's okay. But I'm just giving you that example of what we're actually doing is reinforcing that behavior, okay? And so if you will take that and extrapolate it to other behaviors, you know, when we give in, what we've just done is reinforce that if you do that over and over and over and over and over again, and finally mom, you know, gives in, then the next time, what are they going to do? They're going to do it over and over and over and over and over again because they think at some point you just might give in. Okay, it's just a principle of behavior. So that lack of consistency can be confusing and it's actually counterproductive. So we really do ourselves a favor when we're consistent. And there's grace for those times that we're not. So the last thing I want to talk about is just connecting to character. We talked about connecting praise to those inner feelings of satisfaction and feeling good when we have done the right thing. You know, that's just the way God has designed us. I think that's in Genesis. If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? When we do the right things, we feel good, don't we? But in addition to that, we want to connect it, our praise and our expectations to a character quality. So for instance, you shared your toys. I'm so glad you're learning to be kind. Because God is kind. So see, we're going to connect it to their character and then connect it to the character of God. You're learning to tell the truth. I know that was really hard for you to admit that you took your brother's toy. But you're learning to tell the truth, and that's so important because God is always telling the truth. God always tells us the truth. So I know that some of you have questions, and I know one of the questions is about spanking, and I'm watching the time, and I don't think I'll address that, but I will hang around afterwards if anybody wants to talk through that. I'd be glad to share with you, and I think there are probably some things in that book that Natalie mentioned too. If you want to know kind of a strategy of how to do that with love and grace, and I'd be glad to talk that through with you. I know some of you had other questions too, and I prepared for you, you probably have it on your table too, a little handout. It's really just a brain dump. I figured there was no way I was going to be able to tell you everything I wanted to in these few minutes. And so I just tried to, actually my daughter helped me with some of it. My daughter has been working as a babysitter and a nanny for about 14 years. And I've learned a lot from listening to her because she has been in so many families that she has picked up a lot over the years of about training kids. And So I just put a bunch of ideas down for you that came to mind. And at the end of that, I think I have my email address. You're welcome to email me. You have wonderful mentored moms at your tables who are a great resource. But I would be glad to talk through, especially anything that wasn't clear about what I said tonight. But just in conclusion, let me just say that I love the atmosphere that you all have of supporting each other. You know, this issue of discipline is, it's hard. And we don't have the answers. And we want to be in a position to encourage each other and build each other up, right? And so if you see a mom struggling with discipline, you know, we tend to think, well, I'd never do that. Or, you know, we're trying to learn from each other. But just let me encourage you to pray for that mom when you see her struggling. And let's go to each other and ask, you know, how are you handling this? Let's learn from each other. You have a wonderful community to be able to do that. And I just want to remind you that just as God is faithful to you as your father, he calls you to be faithful and diligent in your parenting as well. There are changes that you can make in behavior, but there are going to be some changes that only he can make. And only he can change their heart, right? And so the best thing you can do is to spend time with God, draw strength from him. You'll be surprised, I'm sure many of you have already experienced this, how many times you're going to be praying about something and God's going to give you an idea about how to handle a situation. So team up with God and the work that he's doing in your child's life. And remember, he has said, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. So our weakness creates space for God to shine through and he gets all the credit. So let me just pray for you before you go to your tables for discussion. Father, we are so grateful for your kindness to us, your patience with us. Thank you that you've made a way for us to be forgiven. And as we long for our kids to come to understand that as well, Father, would you give us wisdom and insight to know how to help them align their choices to reflect your priorities? Father, we long for them to learn to love you and to love other people. And so would you help us to be diligent and wise in this area of discipline? Thank you for these precious moms. I pray that you'd encourage them this evening. In Jesus' name, amen.